Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. As we embark on a new trading week, we are joined once again for the CIO Strategy Snapshot conversation by Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, nice to be here with you on this Monday morning. Thank you for dropping by and for spending some time with our listeners and our clients. Welcome back.
Morning, Dan. Good to be here on another Monday to start the week.
So, Jason, as many of our listeners know, we are coming off what was a very busy macro week last week. Now, this included the latest U.S. payroll report, which we did receive on Friday morning. We also had the semi-annual congressional testimony from Fed Chairman Jerome Powell take place last week. So, up front, I'm curious as to what your reflections, takeaways are from these notable macro events from last week.
Well, a lot of focus, a lot of events, and I think the takeaway is not much change in terms of the overall outlook that we have or kind of what we know about the direction of the economy. If we start with the payrolls report, you know, another solid headline number, but the prior months had been revised downward quite significantly, and some of the underlying details, you know, suggest a little, you know, softer data underneath the headline, including the rise in the unemployment rate that was based off of the household survey that actually saw the total number of jobs decline. So I think what my takeaway from the payrolls report is that much of what we saw in January was probably a bit of a either data anomaly, seasonal adjustments, or kind of this January effect. And now that you've looked at the trend over the past 3 months, it's more clearly showing that the labor market continues to soften if we think about just the trajectory over the past 18 months. Like that's a continuous trend. I think most noteworthy for the Fed was that the average hourly earnings increased 0.1%. January had been 0.6%. So you can see some kind of give back there on the wage front, and consistent with other wage data that suggests it's a continual moderation. So the idea that the labor market is cooling, but it's still solid, and it should, if this trend continues, allow the Fed to cut by middle of the year, that is still kind of in place. Turning to the Fed itself, and there's a number of speakers, and most prominently the Fed Chair Jay Powell was testifying before Congress. Given that he did that before he had the payrolls data and also the inflation data for February that's going to come out this week, there really wasn't a lot that he could comment on in terms of the direction of travel. He reiterated, you know, much of what the committee members have been saying recently, that they've, you know, made good progress, but they need to see more data to be confident that that they can start to cut rates. So you can see market pricing was, wouldn't indicate a big shift in terms of how they, you know, will kind of proceed this year. With, you know, cuts starting, you know, in the June, July timeframe, the total number of cuts around 3.5, you know, by year end. So a busy week, but I would say it's not that we didn't learn anything new, but I think what we learned last week doesn't necessarily change the view that we think the market had overall for the direction of travel from here.
So, Jason, focusing in now on the week ahead, you did mention the inflation data we're expected to receive. Actually, CPI data is due out tomorrow morning at 8:30 Eastern, and we might recall the hotter-than-expected print we received last month. So for inflation data this latest round, what are your expectations?
Well, the expectations are that it's still going to be relatively elevated from both headline and core CPI, the consensus on Bloomberg is 0.3% month-over-month for the core, 0.4% for headline. The issue and the challenge with the February data, at least in terms of forecasting right now, and we may get some kind of clarity when we actually get the data, is that there was two things that really drove the upside surprises in the January data. One was in the kind of non-shelter core services, you know, that surprised the upside, and there were some data points such as, like, say, insurance, that were up just month over month, like over 1%, like around 1.2%, which, of course, if you annualize that, you're coming around 15%. So that pace is certainly not going to be sustained. They also tended to be associated with areas of the market that have high labor intensity, meaning, so like, as wage costs go up, it's going to be impacted by, have a more direct impact on the inflation in those areas. But just going back to my prior comments about the level, like, wage growth moderating, the labor market cooling, we want to see that actually is reflected and also in those kind of data points. They were a bit of a one-off. So we'll see how that plays out. I think that should moderate. The real wild card, though, is in the OER component of inflation. This is the owner's equivalent rent, which is an imputed measure. It is something that the Fed sort of trusts in for based off of rental prices for both multi-family apartment buildings, but also single-family homes. There was apparently a change in their methodology, at least how they weight these things. There's even something that came out on the Bureau of Labor Statistics website suggesting change in methodology, and that notice went away within, you know, 24 hours, or maybe even 12 hours. So there's a very wide range where people, you know, forecasters are suggesting, you know, core inflation could be anywhere from 0.25% all the way up to 0.5%. A lot just depends on this methodology of how they adjust for the owner's equivalent rent. Now, if there's an adjustment, I think that would kind of push the number higher. But the general direction should be that rental rates will kind of moderate this year and next year. So I think the markets would look through some of that. But as the number which we get it, the headline numbers could be either quite comforting or a little bit surprising to the upside, depending on how these methodological and sort of statistical, you know, issues kind of resolve themselves. So there's a lot of scope for deviation. I think to really get the market spooked, I think you'd need a kind of across the board numbers, especially in that non-shelter core services part staying elevated, to be really scared. Otherwise, similar to what the labor market report said on Friday, that January might look like it was a bit of a one-off. Same thing with the CPI data, and we can get the PPI, which from that we can infer a little bit of the February PCE inflation data. If that sort of follows the payrolls report, then I think we're kind of back on track where inflation is continuing to moderate. That still allows the Fed to be on track to cut rates in the middle of the year.
Knowing what we do today, Jason, again, we will learn a lot more within 24 hours or so as it relates to the inflation picture. Though, what are your expectations for the March FOMC meeting, and does CIO's rate cut forecast at this time remain intact?
Well, at the moment, the forecast is still for 3 cuts this year starting in June. Depending on how the inflation data this week, you know, plays out, you know, there could be some adjustment to that. And then next week, we get the FOMC, depending on what they want to signal and communicate, particularly through their projected growth and inflation and where the Fed funds rate could be by year end, i.e. the dot plot suggesting it might be more along the lines of 2 cuts as opposed to keeping it 3. There may need to be some kind of adjustment there. As far as the meeting itself next week, that really will be the focus, is the updated kind of summary of economic projections and also an update on the kind of the dot plot of how the committee now thinks the path for rates should evolve from here. Economic growth will likely be revised a little bit higher. Inflation may hold steady. Whether that alters the dot plot, that remains to be seen. You know, given that it only takes a couple of people to change their views, say from 2 to 3 cuts or vice versa, the median dot could shift from 3 to 2 without a big overall shift in the fundamental view for the FOMC committee members. So that's the one thing the markets will focus more on, is what's the guidance that comes out of the Fed based on the updated economic projections for the Fed funds rate as the year goes on. Because it's almost like 99.9% certain they won't be cutting rates next week. So really the focus is on what's the guidance the Fed has given based on their updated projections and how likely they think rate cuts will be. This could all matter if it still looks like it's 3 cuts this year. I think market pricing wouldn't be impacted very much. If it's down to 2 cuts, there is a risk that the markets could say, well, if you're not going to cut for only twice, then maybe really the risk is that they don't cut at all. And there's certainly been a bit of a growing narrative of the market that maybe they don't cut at all, especially with the election. They may not want to cut in September, as much as they say they don't take the politics into account. So there is scope for some surprise, but it really comes down to the surprise of how much they shift the guidance for rate cuts this year.
Just taking into account all of that as we reflect on market valuations, markets did remain steady last week, and we also have the S&P 500 as well as the NASDAQ hitting all-time highs last week. So is this momentum in the markets justified, and how should investors be positioning at the moment?
Well, I think for the markets, if you go back to last fall, it's been a pretty much steady, steep climb higher for almost all equity indices. And it's broadened out. I mean, there's a lot of focus on the concentration risk, but unlike the first 5 months of last year, where it really was 7 stocks driving the markets higher, you're seeing a number of many more companies reaching all-time new highs. So we're seeing sort of, you know, a bit of a broadening out in terms of the rally. There's more dispersion in the marketplace. That dispersion, I think, reflects the fact that there's 2 real kind of drivers going on in the markets, the equity markets specifically right now. One is there is a macro environment that still looks relatively benign, and you know, the data certainly isn't showing much signs of the economy ultimately kind of tipping over into any real slowdown in the near term. So the soft landing further and further, like we are soft landing, this is happening right now. So you have a macro tailwind that still remains relatively favorable. And to me, the fundamental features of that macro tailwind are growth that will still be around a trend of 2% this year, inflation, that will continue to decline, maybe in bits of fits and starts, but it will be lower by year end. And the Fed will start to cut rates, before year end. That combination overall is pretty conducive to risk assets doing, relatively well. At the same time, there's more of a micro or idiosyncratic factor going on, though, which is AI. That's certainly benefiting a number of individual stocks quite specifically, but it's also contributing to a lot of dispersion in how the market's reacting to earnings guidance or any news of companies benefiting or not benefiting from AI. So the overall direction for equity markets, when they have both sort of micro supports or idiosyncratic kind of thematic drivers in the macro, that is a tailwind for equities to kind of continue to go higher this year. But I think even more importantly, it's sort of there are tailwinds that would prevent a significant decline overall in sort of equity markets, barring some real kind of shock that we're not anticipating or expect to actually materialize. So given all that, it's sort of consistent with some of our key messages on equities in terms of optimizing your tech exposure, and how that means not only the total allocation. I suspect a lot of investors are probably overallocated in the U.S., but making sure that you have the proper allocation, even within it, looking for areas of disruptive technology, things that will kind of benefit from this broadening out of the AI narrative. On the macro side, kind of the small caps, small cap equities are something that we continue to like, which really are, I think, more of a play on the macro environment to continue to be favorable. And we've seen them on a relative basis certainly outperform large cap equities over the past few weeks. So they're kind of starting to kind of catch up after underperforming back in January. On the fixed income side, we continue to like high quality fixed income. It's almost a bit of a hedge to this equity view that if the economy were to slow down and the Fed, rate cuts were back on 3-4 cuts this year, or if not even more, if the yields decline, that would benefit high quality fixed income. At the same time, it's not necessary to take a lot of credit risk at this point to get incremental yield. And credit spreads have gotten quite tight. And if it turns out, there's no Fed cuts this year, yields likely go higher, spreads are likely to widen. And so while equities can benefit, the overall outlook for IG is, or for corporate credit, riskier corporate credit, is a little bit less compelling at this point in time.
Well, Jason, thank you very much for spending some time with our listeners, our clients, to share with them your reflections, takeaways of last week's notable macro events, providing expectations for what the week ahead might have in store and how to position portfolios accordingly. And of course, we will follow up again when we speak next Monday as to how this week's inflation data played out and what it means for the markets and monetary policy going forward. But thank you again for your time today, Jason. Appreciate it as always.
You're welcome. Have a good week.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.